Life is full of what-ifs, some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed, and this particular episode is Cues of the Force. Why cues? Because it's more fun than just saying the word questions. This is our Q&A show. You have provided some cues, and Ken and I are happy to provide some A's. Didn't think about how that sentence was going to end. Anyway, I'm Joseph Scrimshaw.
It ended just fine. This is a show about questions, not the quartermasters for James Bond, who are also in Star Wars. We could do that one as well.
Yes, we'll be having our special guest, Major Boothroyd, very, very soon to talk about all of the James Bond gadgets in Star Wars. Already off the rails. Anyway, how are you, Ken?
I am great. Wonderful questions. Great with a quotation marks around it. You know, hey, we're here to have some fun talking Star Wars.
Exactly. And as we always want to let you know before we get into the fun, we want to let you know about the possibility of even more fun. Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. You can get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/4center. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. This week, we are recommending Mission to Disaster by Justina Ireland, the next High Republic adventure. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/4center. Again, audibletrial.com/4center for a free audiobook, but there is still more.
There's still more, indeed, another offer we have, said Yoda. Inside Editions, publisher of a ton of great Star Wars books, is offering 35% off across their website if you use this special link, insideeditions.com/discount/FC35. This week, we're recommending the Inside Editions book, The Mini Book of Lightsabers. Do you like lightsabers? Do you like books that are kind of tiny in a fun way? This is the book for you. I absolutely love it. The Mini Book of Lightsabers. Again, use the link insideeditions.com/discount/FC35.
Excellent. So check out that mini book for not mini joy, huge joy, huge amounts of joy from Mini Book of Lightsabers. Speaking of joy, we are going to get into our questions. As always, we have two from Twitter and two from our patrons on Patreon. We are going first to Twitter. Ken, we are hearing from Stephen M. Here is what Stephen has to say. Do you think Obi-Wan knew when he saw the Death Star that he wasn't going to survive the mission? I don't know why I chose to read that with a real sense of doom, but I did. I guess I was really trying to hype up this question. It's a great question. But where do you go with that? Do you think Obi-Wan knew when he saw that that was not a moon, that that was his destiny?
This is great, Stephen. I kind of like this thought that's going around Obi-Wan's head of, hey, always in motion the future is. But that he's had this thought going around his head the moment he finds Luke and R2, maybe even in the days up, you know, leading up to that. What is he feeling from the Force? And he's kind of, I don't think he's like, my hero's journey is coming to an end. I am the mentor in this other hero story. I don't think he's got those thoughts, but
I got to be out of here by the third act. Yeah.
Yeah. The hero must learn after I go. I think he's got a sense that this is not going to be easy. But I love what Steven's saying here of that moment, played so well by Sir Alec Guinness, seeing the Death Star and realizing, well, I might never get a drink at Chalmers Cantina again. This might be it.
Yeah, I think it is. I think it is near there, but I think it is not. I don't think the Death Star is the moment that he connects with that. I love what you're saying. I think we've already heard that the Obi-Wan Kenobi comic book is going to play with that of sensing that a shift is coming. I think just watching A New Hope, that there is a sense that he is aware of this convergence of events that he's been waiting for, right? That the Jedi are going to go into hiding until the time is right. And I think he is sensing that, yeah, it's time for the change. It's time for the next generation. It's not subtle. The droid is back.
Yeah.
R2 is back. And Luke seems ready, on the cusp. Fate, destiny, the will of the Force has brought his sister almost to his doorstep. That, oh boy, this is the time. There's even that look on Obi-Wan's face after the message from Leia plays, right? And he kind of decides to engage with Luke, right?
Yeah.
So I feel like he knows that, okay, this is the moment of change. This is, you know, we've been in hiding until the time is right. Now's the time, right? Mm-hmm. And then I think, you know, on the Falcon, he's focused on, you know, his missions, the practical one, get the plans to Alderaan, and really probably even more important to him, guiding Luke in his first steps.
Yeah.
And I feel that, like, kind of that heaviness when he sees the Death Star, I feel, for me, with all the storytelling of Star Wars that has happened since then, it's the weight of, like, oh, wow, they really built something that large, that destructive, you know. This is Palpatine's endgame.
Yeah, the full picture of what they're up against, right? He just thought, oh, I just got to get the plan. Yeah, oh, man, to actually see it. Well, look at the size of that thing, right? Cut the chatter, Obi-Wan. This is, I like that as well. And the thought that, you know, is he picking up on his old pal Anakin might be hanging out on that space station?
Yeah. And I mean, and he's on board with turning around. He's not like, well, it's dark, but we must go. He's like, no, yeah, no, turning around seems wise.
Yeah, you're right.
You know, he's on board with that. I think it's once they're in the tractor beam, once, you know, the choice has been made for them, you know, and Han Solo is like talking about, like, they're not getting me without a fight. And, you know, there are, you know, we can't win, but there are alternatives to fighting. I think that's when he's beginning to see, like, okay, well, destiny is really bringing both Luke and I here. And I think once he gets on the station and senses Vader.
Yeah.
I think that's when he's starting to think, like, it's truly possible that this might be the end of this part of my journey.
Yeah.
Before, I mean, he's trained, he's ready to, you know, become one with the Force for the selfless reason that he can continue to be there for Luke. Right.
Yeah.
So I think by the time he's going to turn off to sneak around and turn off the the beam, tractor beam, incensing Vader and telling Luke, your destiny lies along a different path from mine. I think he's like, I got to confront Vader, partially just to keep him away from Luke. Yeah, might not work out.
I think
that there's a real acceptance at that point. And the reason to me that it's still like an acceptance, a possibility, is it seems like he's engaged with Vader, and it's the course of the fight where he feels like I'm not winning this fight physically, right? I have gotten too old for this. My old man powers are weak in comparison to Vader. And I feel like when he looks at Luke and smiles, it's such a decision, right?
Yes.
To let go. It's such a decision of like, I knew this was a possibility, and I accept this moment, and I choose this moment, right? I really look at that moment where Vader thinks he won as Obi-Wan just beat you in a duel again, right? Because Vader doesn't understand what the fight is about. He doesn't understand the stakes. Mm-hmm. He's just focused on, I finally get revenge on my old master who failed me and, you know, cut my limbs off. And Obi-Wan's like, you don't even know the game we're playing, you know?
Yeah, no, that Vader foot stomp on the robe of just confusion more than the Kylo energy of, oh, I've just been bested by ghost projection, Luke. Oh. More like Anakin, like, oh, maybe I miss him.
Yeah, like, what is going on? What other secret did this jerk have up his sleeve that I've been competitive with, you know?
Yeah, yeah. What I love about this idea here is this big Star Wars idea that we've always talked about of destiny and choices in destiny, that along the way, there's a lot of different ways this could go. And I think Obi-Wan continues to be open to that, right? I think you're right. The little subtle part of that scene is him going, yeah. Big space ball, turn around. Let's get out of here. and just along the way, the Force just keeps leading you forward, and you can choose how to react to that. Yeah, because I guess he could have come out swinging and continued to fight and died in a different way. But I think you're right. I think that smile means a lot there too. So it's an ongoing journey with Obi-Wan.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's just entirely distracting Vader from, you know, the fact that his children are right over there. You know, in a victory for me. I think that's a great question. Thank you so much, Stephen. We're going to move on to a question from Nick Field. Nick says, how much would you like to learn from the Kenobi series promo campaign? I feel like Book of Boba Fett could have benefited from the creators doing more press and shedding some light on what the show would be. Do you agree, or would you rather know as little as possible going in? These are two great Kenobi questions. One, a in-world cosmic question, and one, a real-world information and promotion question. So, Ken, where do you go with this? Do you want to know specifically, do you want to have Kenobi framed by the creators a little bit? And how do you feel about that in general?
I think, look, we're never going to get Adam Driver's dream around The Last Jedi of no press, no trailers, no posters, nothing, which I love that Adam Driver has said that stuff. Like, I don't know what I'm talking about. It. You should all just go see it in the theater. I know we're not going to get that. It's just not realistic. I personally was happy with the Book of Boba Fett's promotion to a degree, but I'm very open to the idea of kind of meeting in the middle with folks like Nick, and Nick's not alone in this, who feel there should have been more framework, like you said, with Kenobi. Looking ahead, if only to maybe kind of curb that kind of conversation around this new show. About expectations, I still believe, and you and I talked about this over the years, we've talked about it. I still believe the marketing was pretty honest from Boba Fett in terms of themes. And there were things to pick up on right away. A lot of the conversations we had already. I don't think there was any suggestions that in the Book of Boba Fett marketing that would let you know that there was going to be two episodes that don't have Boba Fett in it.
Yeah,
perhaps maybe they should may have made it more clear that it was all part of the new Mandoverse. There was some, is it 2.5? There's quotes from Kathleen. It's all this. So that I get. So maybe Kenobi's got a different thing to get out there. It's not necessarily connected to the Mandoverse. So I'm going to meet in the middle, Joseph. All that to say, I'm going to meet in the middle, maybe a little bit more, but I'm happy with vague.
Yeah, I go a lot of different places with this question. There's a part of me that really does believe in clarity, that sometimes clarity is needed to bring people on board sometimes. I think, as you were saying, that would have helped some people and make things less of a distraction. I sometimes wonder what would have happened to the reception of The Phantom Menace if Lucas had been given interviews going like, this is not the original trilogy. This is it's a better time of the galaxy. It's shiny and new. We're really getting into the politics and like framed it that way, right?
Yeah.
Instead of just going like, well, what there? It's there on the screen. Get it? And I think that's where I wrestle with, like, okay, how much should creators need to give us the clarity to help us, and how much should they just let the story do the talking? I tend to lean towards personally that I'm a little bit more in the Adam Driver camp.
Yeah.
You know, beyond the marketing that is necessary, I want to know as little as possible. I want every trailer to be a teaser trailer.
Yep.
I'm happy with things like Book of Boba Fett that played very, very fair with what are the thematic ideas. He's not a bounty hunter anymore. He wants to be a leader. He doesn't want to lead with fear. He wants to lead with respect. Can he bring these different elements together and change the system? All that was extremely clear. And I feel like that is the heart of the story. Mm-hmm. So that was great for me. But I also do understand just not wanting the distraction of... Yeah. With the lack of clarity. So when I think about it, I think like, well, what would that look like for Book of Boba Fett? And I can see a certain value in Favreau doing a press junket where he says something along the lines of like, look, Book of Boba Fett is part of this larger story we're telling in this time period with these characters. Maybe there are going to be some surprise characters popping up. Like, would that have, I guess I want to frame that as a question to you. If he had said something like that, that didn't just totally tip his hand and go, hey, there are two episodes without Boba Fett. Luke's going to show up. Ahsoka's going to show up. You know, we're going to set up Mando season 3 and Book of Boba Fett. If he wasn't that explicit, but just kind of hinted at, you should receive this as a chapter in the overall story that we're telling right now. Do you think that would have helped you? Do you think that would have helped other people with the two episodes that didn't feature Boba Fett?
I think quotation marks around think now, that it would have helped the overall conversation. I look to, and I think you're right, Favreau, because this is more than any other show. Let me go back to this. Book of Boba Fett had so much room in the marketing, but even going back to the surprise end credit scene, where we would remark even on the show, we just don't know what this show's about, right? Which was part of the intrigue, but also just the big questions around it. So I think I have to fall down the side of, yeah, maybe Favreau leading the charge, more clarity in the press. Robert Rodriguez not saying, oh, they've only taken the first few minutes of the episode, which was a statement
incorrect.
And then, you know, the older quotes from Kathleen Kennedy on Investors Day, you know, is it 2.5? Is it what is it in related to the Mandiverse? I think of the day, I just you can't deny that there was a lot of conversations around that, a lot of confusion, a lot of maybe dashed expectations. And without going to the Force Center, speculate responsibly, train of thought, I don't even need to bring that into the conversation too much. I think Favreau being leading that could have worked, but this still could. Obviously, they're going to, you know, the moment bright colored speeders show up, we're going to have a whole another set of problems. But even then, Rodriguez hinted at that too. So I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's it for me of like, you know, if Favreau said something like that in a junket that tried to prepare people as much as possible without just straight up spoiling it and saying chapter 5 is Din's story.
Yeah.
You know, without straight up spoiling it, it might have helped. I think those of us in the kind of all in Star Wars community. But like I've talked to some friends who really liked Book of Boba Fett, aren't all in on Star Wars. Like they like it and they watch it, but they don't do podcasts or listen to podcasts or whatever. And they really enjoyed Book of Boba Fett. And like, I enjoyed chapter 5 and chapter 6, but I was really confused and thrown. I don't know if that would have helped those people, you know, because I don't know if they would have been parsing Favreau's press junket, you know?
Yeah. No, that's a good point. And maybe, yeah. And again, you and I, Jennifer, on the news show just yesterday, we're talking about Revenge of the Sith trailer drops and pretty much tells you here's a lot of what's going to happen, you know, and those are a little bit of a different kind of era of trailers. I for some reason, I think about this and some have brought it before, but, you know, going into Last Jedi and there was a certain expectation of what a Rian Johnson Star Wars film would be, the guy who directed the Fly episode of Breaking Bad. Here's what we got, Looper, all the stuff. And there was that one little moment where Rian's like, hey, also, it's funny. I don't think a lot of people listen to that too. So that's why I'm hesitating when I say it could all help. And Nick's point could be right. But at the same time, it depends on how everyone takes it in.
Yeah, I really think it is about, yeah, who parses it. It is about exactly how it's phrased to try to kind of prep people for what it is without actually spoiling it and taking away some of the surprise or the joy. I see the value in it. I think I personally ultimately come down on, I do see the value in it. I see how it would really help some fans to feel prepared or warned that you should receive Book of Boba Fett is Mando season 2.5 or a part of the overall story of the Mandalorian. You should receive Book of Boba Fett that way. I see how that would have helped a ton of people. For myself personally, at the end of the day, I really think that I want to hear less from the creators. In general, I like the behind the scenes stuff. I like the process stuff. I like really celebrating costume designers and puppeteers and, you know, artists and of every kind. But in terms of like the writers and the directors, the ones who are like really building the soul of the thing, I really lean toward David Lynch. And mm-hmm. I know that's different for everybody because he's very much a filmmaker who he's an auteur. But there's a quote from him. I'm paraphrasing. I didn't have time to pull it up, but it's a meme that you can find in many forms, but it's an actual quote too, where he says, as soon as a film is made, everyone wants you to talk about it. And it's like the film is the talking.
Yeah.
And I tend to agree with that both before and both after for myself personally of, while I understand certain clarity would help people better receive the show or not be distracted by it, mm-hmm. I kind of feel like there's a trust and a respect for the audience of like, this is how it works. The creators create and then we react. And I think that to me is, like I said, it feels like a kind of respect. The story is the story. And that's largely what I want to engage with. And I think for me, it's also just kind of important to think about things in terms of their legacy of like 5 years from now, when people watch Book of Boba Fett, is it going to bump as much for them?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
On repeat viewings now that they knew it's there. Or like if you're a kid and you're 5 years from now, you're 10 years old and this is the first thing you see, are you going to care?
Right.
And you know, I don't, in terms of how long some of these things are going to live, I want to think about that perspective as well of like, is this an issue that's going to be ongoing or is this an issue of the moment?
Yeah. And I would say it's a moment issue. I think even on repeat viewings of seasons, and because, you know, we'll watch them two or three times and do a podcast. You're right. That quote unquote general audience, which just means huge Star Wars fans that don't need to dig in as much. Yeah. There is repeat viewings always change, and years from now the context of everything around it absolutely changes. And to the bigger question, we've had this conversation a few times of just like, how much is it appropriate to share? You know, I love documentaries on bands, but I also don't love to get the direct interpretation of the songs because they're mine now in a way. they're mine now. I like the process of it. I just, you know, I think I haven't thought of it in those terms before. I think because I do like hearing some of the creators in Star Wars, but I've admitted before, sometimes it's like I can point to them and go, see, other person, you were wrong about it because they said this. And that's not necessarily the right energy. It's just kind of the way of the pundit world and just a discussion. I don't want to always have to use it like that. So I think I'm with you somewhere. I'll push towards the David Lynch thing. I do enjoy hearing about it, but I think maybe it's right that I don't hear about it sometimes, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, I think my thing that I've said kind of jokingly, but I kind of mean is like, I think it would be great if it was just kind of like a rough tradition that we don't speak, writers and creators don't speak about the heart of the thing until a year after. So that people can just engage with the story and have discussions about what they found in the story instead of having like, I mean, there's lots of different things where like, look, there's videos of Lucas in those Clone Wars meetings laying out like, here's exactly what I mean by balance of the force.
Yeah.
You know, and I find that gratifying and I'm happy to have that. I don't think it should be like, you know, creators never, ever speak or I'd love to hear from a director the day after their movie came out about what the process was like. What were their experiences like? For me, what I don't like, and it's happened a couple times in Star Wars, is when writers and creators speak very quickly after the film comes out. Mm-hmm. I have this experience doing Force Center where I see so many of the debates online aren't about the text. They aren't about the film. They're about what a writer or director said in an interview.
Yeah.
And I want to discuss the stories, not what, you know, the, I don't want to be, I want to debate and have interesting discussions of, do The Last Jedi and Rise of Skywalker line up? Not do, does this interview line up with this interview?
Yes.
That's just not as interesting to me.
Yeah, and that's a nice way to say it. Not as interesting. I think exhausted and, and other things can apply to some of the conversations and my reactions to them, I should say. Yeah, and I wonder too. You've been a David Lynch fan your whole life, so that's a different example. But that aside, is there anything with you, Joseph, that it's just the way those conversations and interviews have been taken is why you've even distanced yourself more?
I think so. I think it's because when they're conversations that are saying, hey, here's why I made this choice or that kind of thing, I don't think it changes anybody's mind, you know?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
In terms of things that are like, you know, fans who didn't like this element or that element of the sequel, like it doesn't change anybody's mind, right? So there's that element to it. I think where Lynch is also coming from, he's not trying to be difficult. He's trying to be generous and he's trying to be honest. Yeah. He is saying, if I could tell you the way a room full of red curtains and furniture makes me feel in words, I'd just tell you I did all of this because it's a feeling that can't be expressed in words. And it's me trying to communicate something from my soul to you. And I trust you, the audience, to have an emotional reaction to it. And maybe your emotional reaction will be the exact same as mine, or maybe it'll be entirely different because you've had a different life from mine. But there's information in films. There's what characters say, but there's also just your intuition. What did that scene make you feel? Why do you feel that way? What is your instinct about how it connects to other parts of the Star Wars saga for this? And I think what I don't want to have happen is have this exploration that we as fans go through be cut off because we start to have this really interesting emotional reaction to, like, oh, go to Book of Boba Fett. That's weird that Boba Fett isn't in these episodes. Why would anyone ever choose to do that? What does that make me feel? Those explorations get cut off as soon as there's an interview where Favreau just says, here's why I did it. Stop thinking, stop dreaming, stop wondering, stop discussing. I'll give you the answer. Everything is just about having an answer instead of us as humans thinking, feeling, intuiting, discussing, exploring.
Yes. Yeah. No. Well said. Force Center, well said. Going back to the original question, it's, I think if there was more clarity, well, again, clarity is one thing, but more information from the creators, then that would be held against the show as well, I think, from some folks. Some people just might appreciate knowing a little bit more and being set up. And I think the way we want to approach it, it's, I don't know, we came to Star Wars in a different time. Everyone's got a different entry point, this we know, but like, I did not know what the hero's journey was. I didn't know what Lucas intended. I just know I saw it and I was seven and it reacted to it on a different level. Yeah, it's changed over the years. I don't know. I know we're spinning out beyond even just the original question.
But yeah, we spin out. I apologize for that. I really spun out into the after conversation. And I think what Nick's conversation or question was about is the before conversation. And I think for me, go ahead. Please go ahead.
That might be my point. Again, where we are now in since movies were sportified, patent pending on that horrible term, where it was a discussion and every character is speaking a fact in people's minds. Every creator is speaking a fact going in and out. I just think it's a different era than even 2005, where Revenge of the Sith shows you a lot in the trailer. It's a different era. And I think I get bummed sometimes with how people engage with this stuff. Not that it's wrong, just it's not my place to be bummed with how you engage with it. But I want to have those discussions that are about what's on the screen, not what Robert Rodriguez said before the marketing.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And it's just room for us to have our own, you know, experience in being reacting to the art and having a conversation about the art. That's really how I feel about after. I don't even mind if it's years later. Like I just watched Lady from Shanghai, which I've seen a couple times. It's an Orson Welles film, and I've never looked into the history of it. And, you know, just watch it and amazed by it. It's got, you know, one of the most famous scenes in cinema that's been, you know, had different people do interpretations of again and again. And I look on Wikipedia and Orson Welles is like, yeah, I hate that scene. They butchered my film. Like, I don't mind that being out there, but I'm glad that I just got to experience the film instead of experience it with, I'm watching the film that Orson Welles hates that I think was brilliant, you know?
Yeah, look, but look, I've heard, you know, there's stuff around Rise of Skywalker that I got friends who claim to know quotes from JJ about what he felt about Last Jedi, and I always tell them that's great. It's not what's on screen.
Yeah.
Do you know how many times I call a trivia match that I could care less about, but it's my job and I make it work? Sorry, it's just the way it is. I'm less concerned about my thoughts on the match. It's what I'm saying and doing in the match that you should be engaged with. And I think that's some of it too. This is not to turn this question from Nick into like any kind of, you know, this is a great question. And I'm, you know, so who knows, maybe Deborah Chow comes out and goes, here's what the 6 episodes are about. I don't know. I don't know. But I think at the end of the day, I don't know if that helps. I think we'll still have the same discussion.
Generally. Yeah. Yeah. So I think, yeah, I apologize. I spiraled really into, you know, the after conversation. But to kind of bring it back to Nick's question, I think for me, end of the day is I really do appreciate that if a creator wants, particularly in promotion, wants to frame a story so that the audience is ready to receive what it is. Like, I don't mind it when people say like, hey, we're doing, you know, this superhero, but it's a real horror take. We're doing this superhero and it's really a little bit more of a light take inspired by this. Like, I don't mind it if people want to, creators choose to frame a story that way, particularly if they think the audience will receive it better. I personally like as little as possible. But my last thought, Ken, is I kind of think this has already happened up to a point with Kenobi, right? Because they could have buried Vader a little bit.
Yes.
And I think that they were aware either, you know, probably maybe on a practical level, like just it's too much work to hide Hayden or he's he's valuable to us. Or if it leaks, let's just get ahead of it and excite people. Like that could be a part of it. But it also has the benefit of a ton of fans when a Kenobi show is announced are going to assume he never met Vader in between Revenge of the Sith and A New Hope. This is going to be about Kenobi just hanging out on a desert. And already everything they've released from Kathleen Kennedy's announcement, calling it the rematch of the century, to that sizzle reel that very clearly shows Kenobi's going off planet. They are already framing it of like, hey, if anybody thinks this is just Obi-Wan Kenobi fight some water pirates.
Yeah.
We're trying really hard to tell you that's not what the show is. So I already think they're doing a little bit of framing.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And I think to be more than they had for Book of Boba Fett. But Book of Boba Fett did a ton of mystery around it. Even the cast, right? All that kind of stuff. Different take. So I think you're right. Maybe it's already happening.
Yeah. Great question. Obviously, we have lots of thoughts in lots of directions. Any other final thoughts from you, Ken?
No, other than, you know what I can't wait for? A Kenobi trailer.
Oh, that's going to be so great. I'm very, very excited for the Kenobi trailer and press junket if we get it. And I will happily engage and dive in. But for now, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be back with our questions from our patrons on Patreon.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
And we are back to continue Cues of the Force. We go to our patrons from Patreon. We go to It's Just Jeff. A great title for a sitcom. So It's Just Jeff says, hey, Joseph and Ken, first off, I want to thank y'all for having a fun and clean podcast. It's so difficult to find entertaining podcasts that I can listen to with my kids in the car or at home without having to worry about the language. For my question, what show coming up do you think will reveal the most about the Star Wars canon? I was pleasantly surprised how much the Book of Boba Fett revealed, especially in the episode with Luke and Ahsoka, which leads me to believe that Dave Filoni is really, really looking forward to the Ahsoka series and showing us everything from her unseen influences from the Clone Wars through Return of the Jedi, finding Ezra and Thrawn, and how she and Luke meet, plus who knows what else. Thank you for that question. It's Just Jeff. And thank you for Ken and his broadcasting history. Really encouraging Force Center to be a swear word free zone.
Hey, you know, working TV clean will get you TV is what I was told in stand up. But I do enjoy a good swear word every now and then.
Yes, we do. Sometimes we have to bleep ourselves in the moment. Where do you go with this question, Ken? Are you excited for what more Star Wars canon we're going to learn? Where do you think we're going to learn it? And what are you thinking about Ahsoka?
Always excited. I always talk about this living history document, and now I get to learn a new page, a new entry. Love that stuff. I think to Jeff's question, I think Ahsoka is the answer, right? In terms of where we're going to probably get the most. Kenobi's going to be dealing with the big things for sure, but it's like plugging up the gaps in a time period we've all spent so much time in, where Ahsoka just has a chance to pull from so many corners, old and new. Imagined and dreamed of. We really have a new canvas to paint on here in this key part. So it's going to be this post 5 year range where, you know, there's a lot of heir to the empire like thoughts we have about this time frame, but now we're going to get those kind of answers versus again, answers with Kenobi, but a different kind of feel of like, hey, there's a little puzzle piece. We're going to put it in there and you're going to learn about where this character ended up. Now it's an open road. And I think that is a great way to just pull in and give us a lot of canon.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I think that Kenobi will maybe provide more Maybe more emotional canon. I think there is the strong possibility with that sizzle reel of seeing, you know, Inquisitors in live action, which will be great and exciting. I think there's a possibility of, if it is the story of a physical and emotional rematch between Kenobi and Vader, it is the story of when Kenobi once thought as Luke did, and how Kenobi comes to truly believe that Luke is the hope for the future, and that Anakin is gone. That's going to be a lot of emotional canon, the great phrase that that you introduced to the podcast, Ken, of, you know, after Kenobi, how many moments that we know so well from the original trilogy or the prequel trilogy will maybe feel a little bit different, or from the Clone Wars animated series. So I think that is a big possibility. I think Andor also might really enhance the story of this time that's the Cold War between the Empire and the Alliance. Like, we've got that with Rebels. We've got the early Imperial era with Bad Batch. But Andor being like, I am actively doing the work of the Rebellion as things are kind of at their absolute worst. I think that might kind of reframe some of our understanding of that period of the Cold War between the Empire and the Alliance.
Love that. Yeah, I'm just excited for those answers. I love these. And you, the emotional canon versus the canon conversation is always fun to get into. The emotional canon thing really came out of my personal journey with Last Jedi, of going, oh man, you know, I got something different out of this. I was expecting literal, you know, beats of the story of what's next, and I was daydreaming about that and Luke getting the fight. Instead, I got these emotions that connect to what George was teaching me years ago, and that's where I really started focusing my Star Wars love. But I always love who, what, and where in Star Wars.
Yeah, and I think for me, with the emotional canon, the thing that I like is, yeah, I love when we learn something more about a planet, or we haven't seen that planet in this era, or we learn that this person actually knows this person, or this person actually invented the word wizard, or whatever sort of like a more factual canon. I really like seeing this great Star Wars story of, you know, if you're a Jedi who lived in the Old Republic, if you're a scoundrel who lives at the time of the First Order War, we're all faced with these kind of similar challenges of who do we want to be, and how do different characters at different times, at different places, how do they face them, right? And things like emotional canon, like the movie Solo, just line one of the reasons I love it is it gives us so much emotional canon that lines up with who Han Solo is, you know, and it isn't about appearance, but about emotion and about character truth, you know. So that's the way I always really like that phrase that you brought into our podcast world.
It would look funny. You look at Solo and like the Kessel Run, that was not even close to how I picture that for 40 years of my life. Not even close. And I'm not saying I come out of that better than anyone else, right? We always talk about there's your way of watching Star Wars is the way you watch Star Wars. We just prefer you not root for Palpatine around these parts, but it's kind of our thing. But yeah, like I just was more focused on Alden's face in the Kessel Run versus the Kessel Run, if that makes sense.
Yeah, what he was accomplishing and how he feels like that was his first step into the real world. He made his name, right? You know, yeah. He got what he wanted and is so proud of himself. I want to zero in on Ahsoka, the television show, just a little bit, because it's just Jeff has some tantalizing ideas about the kinds of moments in her life that we might see or learn about. What kind of canon, be it just sort of factual stuff or more emotional canon, what kind of moments, ideas, things are you hoping for from the Ahsoka show?
In terms of canon and moments, funny, there's a meme going around. Just saw it briefly. It's like, I think it's Rosario Dawson in Ahsoka looking at a cell phone, whether it's a real shot from her trailer or something. I don't know. I just saw this photo and it's just like Ahsoka during the Battle of Scarif, Battle of Hoth, Battle of Endor. And I think Rosario tweeted back of, hey, it's a big galaxy with a lot of other things going on. Right. And so funny little exchange, but that got me excited for, yeah, you're right. This is a question that we now have, because Ahsoka as a character, it didn't exist when this all began, and then now she's here, and then where is she? She didn't die. Uh-oh, where's she going? So I want to know what is pulling her away, beyond just Ezra, Sabine, Thrawn. That's the easy answer there. But what is really going on? And then, especially because now we see her back interacting with Luke, seeing Grogu. She's tied into some of the bigger things. What's her thoughts on Leia? What kind of conversations would she have with Han? I do want to see all that or know what happened. I do want some of those details, but I'm excited to see her take her very balanced Jedi-like approach, whether she's Jedi or not in title, and just take it to other parts of the story I haven't seen yet.
Yeah, that's really great. I think there is, for me, still some ambiguity in how you can read World Between Worlds of, mm-hmm. you know, did she just, was she marooned?
Yeah.
Or did she just, when she re-entered, did she enter, you know, years later in yeah. the future? Did she just skip the Civil War, the, you know, Galactic Civil War?
Yeah.
I think some clarity on that might be interesting. But I just really think that whatever we see will be about the emotional journey that Ahsoka is on. We've got some hints in terms of plot, right? That she might be looking for Thrawn because she promised to see Ezra. This might be the setup to that moment at the end of Rebels where how'd she get that white cloak? How'd she go full Gandalf the White and, you know, go pick up Sabine? But that stuff is all plot, right?
Yeah.
And we know that these shows are about who the characters are. So I'm really curious about what journey is Ahsoka going on? What is she trying to come to peace with? Mm. You know, what is she trying to set right? Is she trying to decide her code in this new era? We've also got some hints from the way that she interacts with Luke, right? Mm-hmm. Is she carrying guilt or anger about Anakin's fall or about not being engaged with yeah. the Galactic Civil War? You know, we don't know what else she went through in her days as a rebel operative when she was Fulcrum, right? There's mm-hmm. a lot to fill in there. But then, like, kind of actively going forward, the big question of, like, is she looking for Ezra just to fulfill a promise? Because yeah. her goal that she kind of defined for herself toward the end of the Clone Wars is, I help people. That's what a Jedi is to me. When I see somebody in trouble, I help them. Mm. And I promised Ezra I'd find him. So I'm going to go find him. Or is she looking to Ezra to be, like, a potential for the future of the Jedi? Like, there's yeah. so many big questions about, like, what she wants and what she's coming to terms with. And I think all the flashbacks, all the canon we might get to see is all going to flow from whatever it is she is dealing with.
Mm. God, you just reminded me that we're probably getting some Anakin stuff, right?
Oh yeah. I mean, he's in the cast. So I think, you know, very, very strong possibilities for flashbacks and Force spirits, right?
Yeah, indeed. And you know, I love Ahsoka in Book of Boba Fett is great. I really love it. And she's kind of the Ahsoka we have come to know and love, of this very peaceful, very centered, and relationship, the interaction with Luke and Grogu, everything was great. I love the Mando appearance because there's a little bit more, I don't know, a little bit more angst, sadness.
Trauma.
A little, not, I won't say anger, but, you know, she needs the information. She needs to find Thrawn. Like, I'm more intrigued by that right now. And I don't know, the Boba Fett doesn't counteract that at all. It's just an extension. It's a fully formed character. But I still go back to those moments, especially at the end of that episode, of like, what is going on inside of Ahsoka's soul?
Yeah, no, and I love that she is a very centered Jedi. Like, obviously, she's compassionate. The episode is called The Jedi, and I know people mm-hmm. have issues with her saying, I am no Jedi to Vader, and how all that squares. And I think this episode might get into that. But, like, even earlier in that episode in Mandalorian Season 2, she's like, you're going to give me the information. The only question is how. I'm paraphrasing. Right. But, like, that's a real Jedi thing of, like, look, you have something I need, and you're going to give it to me. You can hand it to me, or we can fight.
Yeah,
your choice. Like she's not just, mm-hmm. you know, I'm picking flowers and someone attacked me. She's on a mission, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of violence in that mission of the episode. Yeah.
There is. And yeah, so I'm excited. There's so many things we can see. I think they'll flow from, you know, whatever issue she is trying to resolve, yeah. Which there are loads to pick from. Now, I also think for me, it's always important to remember that I think this is clear in his work, and he said it. And I do like sometimes hearing from creators. Filoni is a creator who likes to leave some room for interpretation and future exploration. So I think there's some things that will be like, oh, cool, we found out this canon detail, and other things that we will not get 100% clarity on because he likes doing that.
Before and after, going to that other conversation. Yeah, press junkets and after. He'll, you're right. He'll play. He'll put on that t-shirt and that hat and he'll play.
Yeah. Didn't he have the whole game with the Ahsoka Lives t-shirt or not? Right. That kind of thing. Yeah. Right. I don't remember all the details of that. I'm sure other fans do, but yeah. Mm-hmm. Filoni's playful.
Yes, he is.
Any final thoughts on that question, Ken?
No. Other than we said somebody, I mean, seriously, you just I kind of totally forgot that Anakin's in Ahsoka. There's just so much. What a time to be alive. So much Star Wars coming out. I forget a big detail. Oh, yeah. Anakin / Vader might be in the Ahsoka series. Oh, by the way, there's the Ahsoka series.
Yeah. And by the way, Book of Boba Fett revealed that. Yeah, of course, Luke and Ahsoka met. So are we going to get to see that the first time? Yeah. So much great stuff. I think it's just Jeff is right to be excited and got me even more excited. We are going to move on to our final question from Adam Knight. Adam says, Ken, Joseph, and Jennifer, the biggest question possible on my mind right now is this. What is your responsible speculation in regards to the weight of the Darksaber? My theory that I've been going for with friends has been that when the original Vizsla Mandalorian Jedi crafted the blade, that it became imbued with a sense of purpose, not necessarily responsibility. Hence why Moff Gideon didn't seem to have any issues swinging it around. He has never doubted his purpose to rebuild the Empire, yet Din Djarin and Sabine from Rebels struggle with it, not necessarily because of its physical mass, but from its emotional weight, since neither of them were set in their own mind why they had the blade and who they wanted to be. May the Force be with you always. May the Force be with you, Adam. This is great. Ken, do you go somewhere different, or do you just pretty much agree with Adam?
I love it. I actually wrote my notes. This is great. Adam wins this round. He's got the points for this round here in the ongoing debate. No, I love this here, because even if you look at the history that we don't know a ton of, just other than Tar Vizsla created this because he was the first Mandalorian inside the Jedi Order. That itself right there, inside the Jedi Order, he creates his own weapon, not just goes and gathers his kyber crystal at Ilum. He creates his own weapon that is different than all the other weapons. Like, there's already a sense of identity, a sense of purpose, a sense of why he's here. You got, I don't know, attachment to what he was. I don't know. That's a conversation for the Jedi Order to have thousands and thousands of years ago. Fascinating stuff. So to take all that into this, I do love this idea, because it also adds a danger to this blade. The blade itself, the weapon itself, doesn't necessarily have a dog in the fight, right? It's this idea of, like, the Force, you know, Sith and Jedi, it's more, the Force is about light and dark. Not the organizations, different people can access the Force, you know, it's not rooting there. So Moff Gideon, in a weird way, finds his purpose. Hey, all villains are heroes in their own stories, right? That's what you're told, mm-hmm. right? And the blade reacts to that. So now there's this real extra added danger to this Darksaber. People like Maul get it, people like Moff Gideon, and that's why it's important to have the right person with it. And it makes a lot of sense with Sabine and Din, and even, who knows, Bo-Katan. Maybe she's at one point is like, you know, it turns out this is kind of heavy. I don't know about this. I don't know. I'm fascinated. And so at the end of the day, I really like what Adam's saying here.
Yeah, no, I really, really like it. I like this whole idea of the Darksaber is almost a kind of a sword in the stone story, but the stone is the sword. I really, really love that. And I think this is one of those great things where it's like, okay, so some new ideas are being, you know, lined up with this sword that's been around for a while. So how does it match up with what we have already seen? And I really agree with Adam that, wow, we've seen a lot of people use it. Moff Gideon, Maul, Pre Vizsla is the one who introduced it to us. And I went back and rewatched that clip, and I forgot, like, when he takes it out, he gives the little preamble of where it's from. And, you know, said it was, you know, we took it back at the time of the fall of the Old Republic. And since then, many Jedi have died on its blade. He's practically giving it a mission statement. Like, this is my Jedi killing sword, you know? And between Pre Vizsla, Maul, Moff Gideon, I so agree with Adam. They are centered. This is a weapon to give them power, to eliminate their enemies, to lead to them having more power. That's what all three of them are after, is more power, more control, more me in charge, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So there's that centeredness. And then, with Sabine and Din, it's the a lack of centeredness in, you know, there's ambiguity. That's what that whole episode with Sabine is about, right? Of, like, do I want this responsibility? You know, where do my true loyalties lie? You know, I've got unresolved issues that I haven't dealt with, all that stuff. And Din really, you know, we're watching him choose who he wants to be. But in terms of when it relates to Mandalore, he really doesn't know who he wants to be. Yeah. So I like the idea that Adam's saying that you just need to have a sense of purpose and People who used it for violence and to try to seize more power, well, no problem because they had their purpose. But I also like the idea that this Kyber is, you know, more powerfully sentient. You know, the Kyber in the Skywalker blade called out to Rey, you know? Is it a blade like that where it feels like, hey, anybody with purpose is going to have no problem swinging me. But when it's picked up by somebody who might truly unite Mandalore, who might truly fulfill, you know, what this blade was crafted to be, that it's like even harder on them. Like, all right, if you really want to pick me up to just, you know, get your own power and chop limbs, okay, then I'll fly. But hey, if you might be someone, you know, with actual honor who might unite people, I'm really going to put you through your paces and make sure that you're using me the right way.
I love that. Is it anything worth doing is not easy? Is this the philosophy behind it?
Yeah. So I love the story. Do you get troubled at all with, do you feel like it lines up, or do you feel like you needed to have this information about the Darksaber sooner?
I definitely didn't need it, but when I saw this question, I was like, you know what? I haven't spent a lot of time analyzing why Moff Gideon swung that thing around even to slice bread and get out of a TIE fighter, you know? It's how I take Star Wars in sometimes. I watch and then analyze after, which of course everyone does, you know what I mean? But you know, it's like, yeah. I didn't live in that space a lot, but I love this. And that's part of the fun. Going back to even the previous question of canon and emotional canon, head canon and all, it's kind of, I love the little corners to play with until we get an answer. And Dave is, of all the people out there, might be one who's like, don't worry, I got an answer coming. I just won't tell you. Maybe we get the history of the Darksaber in Mando season 3, a flashback to actually see live action Tar Vizsla. Like, that'd be pretty cool. And we get a little bit more information on what goes into it. So I really like this a lot. And I like think about this more than I even did before the question.
Yeah, I really like it, kind of symbolically, thematically, but I also like where it's going, because at this point, it feels like this idea about the Darksaber is the log line for season 3 of Mandalorian. Of, you know, we've learned that, yep, Mando chooses Grogu, Grogu chooses Mando, they are together, and Din has pushed back on some of the rules of the Children of the Watch in order to be with Grogu. But now he's jetting off to, you know, find redemption for taking his helmet off. And I think the Darksaber kind of frames him as like, you've met different Mandalorians. You've met Bo-Katan, who wants to unite and doesn't care if Mandalorians are different. She has a broad view of who can be a Mandalorian. Do you want to be like that, Din? Or do you want to, you know, repent for taking your helmet off and go back to the armorer? And what does the armorer want? If you're just like the arm of the armorer,
yeah,
what are you actually doing for her? And all of it just adds up to this sword going like, what do you actually want, Din?
What do you want, man?
We're at the restaurant. The server's at the table. You got a menu. What do you want, Din?
Put in your order. No appetizers. Get to the main course.
Exactly.
Great stuff.
Yeah. Very, very exciting. Great question, Adam. It's just Jeff, Nick, and Stephen M. Thank you all. Ken, those are our questions on this episode of Cues of the Force.
I love separating this out. Good to spend a lot of time on these wonderful questions. Thank you all for submitting those. If you have questions of your own, here's some ways to find us and submit those questions. You can do it on Twitter when we put out a tweet. We put out a pinned tweet sometimes for these questions. Look for that. You can follow us at Force Center Pod. We're also on Instagram and YouTube. Facebook page is Force Center Podcast. Podcasts available a lot of different spots, including Acast, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, and others. Just search and you'll find us. Merch available at tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter. You can support us directly at patreon.com/ForceCenter. You can follow me at CatNapsock and go to my website, catnapsock.com. Finalized, got a big comedy show I'm part of on June 4th. We're looking ahead to June 4th, but it's going to be at Doug Weston's Troubadour, West Hollywood. Smothers Brothers were there. John Lennon was there. Elton John was there. And then I'm going to do 5 minutes of comedy there. It's going to be a lot of fun. Look for information on my website. Still highlighting some of the charities focus out there. Obviously, a lot going on in the world. If you're like me and just kind of tragically glued to updates from Ukraine, one good spot, it's an accredited charity, is Ukraine Crisis Relief Fund by Global Giving. Go to globalgiving.org and get more information there. Joseph, what about you?
Yeah, you can find me Twitter, Instagram, TikTok is at Joseph Scrimshaw, and you can check out my website, josephscrimshaw.com, for all of my other comedy adventures. But for now, for myself, for Ken, for the Darksaber, this has been Force Center.
Welcome to Sincerely Sloan, presented by Uninterrupted. I'm your host, professional tennis player, wife, parent, and entrepreneur, Sloan Stephens. As an athlete and as a person, my journey has had a lot of twists and turns, from moments of adversity and doubt to unimaginable triumph and satisfaction. Throughout the season, I'm joined by some of the biggest names in sports, entertainment, culture, and a few members of my tribe. Our conversations keep it real and push it past skin deep. We reveal the perspectives, routines, and products that allow each of us to show up at our best. Join me on my journey of self-discovery and many, many laughs along the way. Sincerely, Sloan.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 bacon bundle, because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the bacon cheese slider, 1921 bacon cheese slider, or chicken bacon ranch slider, and also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 bacon bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.